and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. I'm Jake, that's Sean. I guess I've never looked or thought to listen for it, but I feel like I haven't done that in like 2 weeks.
I feel like maybe not. I can't remember. It's just there's so many memories of that that I guess my brain inserts it if you didn't.
Yeah, it's like, what are we? That was the, what, 181st time or so? My. Whatever episode number this is whatever number that I'm at for doing that jingle. But Sean, how was your weekend? How are you doing?
I'm good. My weekend was lovely. I played some of the new format, new deck stuff. I have a few decks built. None of them, I would say, are like optimized, but I had a league challenge. And I wanted to bring something funky, something different. And so I decided to go with a lightning-based Raging Bolt deck.
Ooh.
So Raging okay. Bolt with Maridon and Raikou and Electric Generators, rather than the Sandy Shocks build, which, you know...
You did say last week that you don't like the Sandy Shocks build as much.
I mean, no. I think the Sandy Shocks build, it just doesn't come online until your opponent has taken two prizes. So it's kind of like, and then you have, and you have all these two prizers. The problem with both decks, like I know that the Sandy Shocks build, you can play the ancient Koridon, the single prizer, but its damage output is still pretty small. So you're primarily a two prize deck. And look, I did not do super well. I'll just say it. My first two matches in the challenge were Lugia's back to back. And you'd think, oh, well, Lugia's weak to lightning, so, you know, it's a win, right? And it's like, well, if the only two prizer on their board is Lugia and everything else is a single prizer that can knock you out with one hit, you're going to have a bad time as a two-prize deck. Mm-hmm. So that was two tough matches. Third one, did well. And then the fourth match I had was Charizard EX. It was actually, I think it was a fairly close match. And my opponent just Charizard was able to do its thing. And even though I knocked out two Charizards in a row, they were able to just every turn from like a 2 to 3 card hand, get every piece they needed to evolve another Charizard. So it was just kind of like, you know, sometimes like good decks are good for a reason. And we'll talk about that deck extensively soon. But,
one deck that we're not going to talk about really, but I wanted to shout out Origin Form Dialga V-Star. I think I mentioned last week that I was just really hoping that someone would just go crazy, right, with the deck. Like, I know it's not a tier one deck, it wasn't going to win, but if someone could just go crazy far or whatever, that would have been awesome. And there was a streamed round of Origin Form Dialga V-Star. I believe it was Criso Amanatidis. I tried my best on pronouncing that. But anyways, he played Origin Form Dialga V-Star Metang, and he absolutely dominated the game. It was
brutal.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was awesome. Like, it was the real reason, like the perfect showcase of why I love the deck and why I want to play the deck. So I recommend, if you haven't seen it already, I think it's like round 3 or 4 on day one.
Yeah,
like it's really early. Yeah, it's like really early in the tournament. It's either the first one they streamed or the second round. So go check that out. He did place 166th, 8-4-3. So pretty respectable number, honestly, like overall, with such a unique deck, as they say. But man, I didn't get to watch as much as I wanted to over the weekend. I got bits and pieces. It was super busy. It was super busy for me. You can't really tell on this camera or whatever, but I'm extremely sunburned. Like I'm tired, lack of sleep. You know, we're recording this as well in the morning, so I haven't really woken up yet. It's like,
that's a great coffee mug though, Jake.
Oh, yes, yes. My Snorlax, but first coffee. It's my daily tradition, some coffee in the morning.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I also didn't get to watch a ton. I actually, for the YouTube viewers out there who maybe got either a notification or something that like, hey, there's a Metapod stream. What's happening? I did attempt to do a stream. The place that I am streaming at, I want to stream a cup. There's a locals that I want to stream the League Cup. It may or may not be on the Metapod YouTube. It seemed to run better on Twitch with less great internet, but we're trying to figure it out. So if another wild stream appears in 2 weeks, that's what it is. So
did you do it on your channel Twitch, or the Metapod channel?
I did the YouTube stream on the Metapod channel, but I did the Twitch stream on mine. So
I was gonna say, did you unlist it? Why?
Because it was bad. It kept freezing. It didn't really work. But hey, anybody who popped in or happened to see that, like, shout out to you. Y'all are the real. But yeah, that was another thing that happened with the YouTube channel. But if you aren't subscribed to YouTube, or maybe my Twitch, I don't know. I'm not trying to get you to follow my Twitch, but like, in 2 weeks there will be a League Cup that will be streamed by someone on this podcast somewhere.
Anyways, hope you're excited for that. I did really enjoy the rounds that I saw at EYC. I thought it was fun, refreshing amount of decks, some really cool stuff that got showcased. And I can't wait to continue to play this format. I will say, and we'll get into more of the results later, Tord Reckliff won his 5th international championship in that one. Sean, are you ready to call him the greatest of all time?
I mean, I think it's, he hasn't won worlds yet, has he? No,
he's gotten fourth. He was fourth in 2019, and he was second
last year.
I feel like he's probably did something prior to that.
I mean, yeah, he's very good. I think that, like, he probably, yes, he winning 5 internationals is a huge deal. So an international event in some ways might even be harder to win than worlds, because the competition, the field is much bigger. It's much broader, actually. My last challenge, I'm sure the last thing that he wants to put the feather in his cap is worlds. So I think the second, maybe he'll never win worlds, but he's probably the greatest of all time. But that's the only thing that would separate him from, like, some of the other goats out there.
He's definitely, in my mind, the greatest in the modern era.
Yes.
I mean, he also, like, 2008, he was top 16. 2012, he was top 32. 2017, he was also top 32. So numerous, like, top 32s overall at Worlds. I think, like, 5 or 6 of them total now. Top 64 in 2018. So I think he's definitely what I would argue as the best modern era player. I think it gets a little hairy when you talk about the conversation of, like, Jason Klesinski, right? Because Jason Klesinski has won multiple world championships, but the size of the events that, like, he was competing in are much, much smaller. You know, the point threshold now is much higher as well to be able to qualify for these world championships. Although for the great players, like, you know, Tord Reckliff, Azul Garcia Griego, you know, the 600 point threshold is not actually
that's a good point. So, the second you win an IC, I don't think that the point threshold matters to you.
No, I think this year it's new rules this year, but isn't the win automatic invite, right?
You win a regional as well.
Yeah, regional and ICs are automatic invites. So, Tord Reckliff very much securing his invite, even more so. Doing a really, really good job. And so, I don't know. I just think that's an interesting thing, because obviously when Tord wins, people are like, is he the greatest of all time? And I don't know. It's like the conversation of Michael Jordan and LeBron James for all you sports fans out there. Like, it's two different eras.
Yeah.
Of the competition. So are they comparable? I'm not saying that they're not, but I don't know. It's definitely different timelines. Jason Klesinski, like, literally changed the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, after he won in, what was it, like, 2014 or 2015, when he beat the Wailord deck, like, he literally, I'm pretty sure the time rules, like, changed right after that because of how he, like, played the clock, right? Legally.
Yeah.
You know, so Yeah, as it's curious, feel free to let us know what you think, wherever you're watching or listening from, because I'd be curious to see your opinion. But anyways, Sean, before we get into the topics, you had a quick little thing, quick little blurb that you wanted to quickly shout out.
Just a quick shout out. I think there is a pupper that I'm showing on screen right now for those watching on YouTube, but for those listening as well, there's a dog named Violet. A really good friend of mine has been fostering this dog and just wants to find Violet a home. She's amazing. She's really sweet. I'm allergic to dogs, and I don't mind spending time with Violet. So, she's wonderful. But definitely, we'll leave a link to her Instagram profile in the show notes. If you are in the New York area in particular, feel free to reach out via that Instagram link. It also has a link to the adoption profile. But just wanted to shout out Violet, using the podcast for the opportunity for people to find IRL Pokemon that they can put into their lives and into their home. So that's it. Appreciate you giving me the time as well, Jake, and appreciate it to the listeners.
Of course, yeah. I mean, we usually try to keep it Pokemon
We do.
TCG related, but for stuff like this, it's heartwarming and you never know. But anyways, Sean, if you're maybe not looking for a pet due to like allergies or anything like that, maybe you're looking for world's dates. Let me tell you, Honolulu Worlds 2024 dates were announced after the EYC championships during the closing ceremonies. It is going to be from August 16th to the 18th, the like usual time, the usual
I think
weekend.
when we had a guess, I was like, I think it'll be in the middle of the August month, and my guess
Yeah.
was literally that weekend, because I'm just like, it makes sense, right? You're not going to do
It,
it too early.
I think it's always, or not always, but I think it quite
Usually.
frequently like has fallen on that weekend, I saw some people say. So we'll never know why it was announced so late. We have no idea, and there's no reason to speculate too much on that because neither of us work for TBCI. But it will be in Worlds for the fourth time, I believe. It's been three times in the past, one in 2007, one in 2010, and then the last time in 2012. Both of the ones, or all three of the ones previously, were in Kona, Hawaii, and not Honolulu, Hawaii.
I will point out though that the original Pokemon Championship was also in Hawaii, the very first one hosted by Wizards
The
of the Coast.
original? What was the, so like prior to 2004? Because World started in 2004. Oh, okay.
Official Worlds from Pokemon Company started in 2004, but there were
Yeah.
Pokemon Championships run by Wizards of the Coast going all the way back to the year, I think, 99 or 2000.
Oh,
So
whoa, I don't know those.
yeah,
Yeah.
the original Wizards era, they hosted championships. I don't know if they were called Worlds. I can't, somebody in the YouTube comments will let us know, but the very first, like, what is maybe considered a Worlds event was hosted also in Hawaii back in the day. So, fun fact.
Interesting. I was gonna say, like, I had no idea about that, and I feel like I have paid like more attention to the past formats in the past years compared to the average player, right? Because I collect like retro decks and stuff like that, and so I didn't even think about that. So that's really cool. I'm gonna have to like look into, the base set championship deck from 99 to see if there's anything on
Yeah,
that
to see
that
if there's
you can
anything.
find. Yeah, it's probably really tough to find that, because especially the early years, like pre-2010, like sometimes information can be really tough. But anyways, I unfortunately won't be in Honolulu, even though I am closer to Honolulu. It's just a little bit too far away. And a weird time as well. So hopefully maybe the next time in San Francisco, I could probably go in 2026, but 2024, I'll have to miss the Honolulu skateboard.
Well, I will say the artwork, I was just showing it on screen a second ago with like this the snorkeling goggles. Very cute. There's going to
It
be a
is
very
it
cute snorkeling Pikachu plushie there.
Yeah, it's gonna be like you thought the Japan World's merch was hard to get and scalp to heck. This one's gonna be up there too. This is in my opinion one of my more favorite artworks they've done in the last like 5 years.
Yep, very colorful. So, Jake, are we ready to get to the main topic at hand, which is EUIC, a new format, post rotation, all of it wrapped into one?
I think what you were trying to say is that I was entirely wrong about what I thought was going to be in the top eight. But yes, let's go into EUIC. So, Sean, do you want to go into top eight first or the deck distributions?
Let's quickly do a deck distribution. We'll do day one, day two deck distribution, and then we'll jump to top eight. So I have day one pulled up right now. And for anybody wondering, there was 2,595 masters. I don't know. Is that the largest Pokemon competitive event ever? It's kind of in
It
that
is
weird
up
territory
there.
now. Yeah.
It's up there. We've said the problem is that we have said largest event ever numerous times in the last couple years.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to tell, but from what I can see on the on like Limitless TCG, I think it might be. It's definitely in the tops because I think only Japan, from what I can tell
Yeah.
so far, has been higher. And I'm trying to find out if there's anything bigger than that.
Yeah, Japan sometimes has had like 3,000 plus person events.
Yeah, they have huge events.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll see. The point being, huge event, and then
Yeah,
it may
massive.
even be broken by NAIC in 2 months, still to come. But Jake, how does this deck distribution, does anything here surprise you?
So one thing that I will say, I don't really feel like this surprises me too much. Maybe the only thing that surprises me is that Charizard is higher than what I thought, Charizard being 22.85% of the meta. And whether that's Arvin Charizard or Pidgeot Charizard or Bibarel Charizard, we don't like
It's all
fully
just,
know because it's just that, but just Charizard itself is 22.85% of the meta. But honestly, like if we're thinking about like the decks coming into the event and how they've been doing in the past, maybe Charizard doesn't surprise me too much as the number one after thinking about it a little bit. Chin Pao being 12.7% of the meta, this one really doesn't surprise me because I feel like Chin Pao, I feel like, is very popular. People like that archetype, and to see it get stronger, as you know, we were saying on the podcast last week, I don't think this surprises me too much. I will say the Arceus Giratina V Star Arctina, being 7.98% of decks, fourth highest played deck overall. That one might be a little bit surprising. I would have expected Lost Box Giratina to be over that one.
Yeah. I agree. Like they're close-ish. There's like 40 more Arceus Giratina builds, but you know, I guess I wonder if people are just like prioritizing early in the format the notion of consistency. Also, the fact that you have Iron Leaves now, it gives you that additional one-shot Pokemon for Charizard. So they might be sitting there thinking, well, previously, I really needed Star Requiem to take out Charizard, but now I can get to a Charizard with the Iron Leaves. Maybe you even shuffle an Iron Leaves back in with a Super Rod, do it twice, and then take out a Pidgeot with the Giratina V-Star. So definitely I think a bit of a change. Now, whether or not that is the quintessential version of Giratina moving forward, I do think Giratina is in a weird spot though, where kind of like how Lost Box used to be, where there would be like two or three types of versions of it. I feel like Giratina now, I think like Lost Box version was the definitive version for a while, and now it's just kind of like, eh, whatever your preferred play style is.
I think also the idea of Maximum Belt being in the Arctina deck gave a lot of people a really boost of confidence really with the deck, and more of a reason to play it. Because like, if you think about it, like the 280 of the Arceus, it used to be like, if you don't get to Trinity Nova slash whatever, I forget Arceus's ability, what's the ability called?
Starbirth.
Starbirth, yes, thank you. If you didn't get to use like either of those two things like in your game, you probably lost, right? Like it was so dependent on it. And so that 280 was a really easy number for a lot of these decks to hit. But with the maximum belt, right, the maximum belt gives more HP to that Arceus, either at the beginning of the game if you wanted to do that, or maybe like later in the game on the like Giratina, right? Yeah. Because maximum belt, for if for anyone who doesn't know, because it's not the most popular, I would say, A-spec. It is one of the new A-spec cards. Attack used by this Pokemon, this card is attached to, do 50 more damage to your opponent's active Pokemon EX. So being able to just take knockouts and like disrupt your opponent's side of the field as they're building, that Trinity Nova can do like much more damage, or that the Giratina's first attack name. Man, I'm losing it this morning. I haven't woken up yet.
Attack names, I forget attack names all the time. But point being, Giratina's first attack does 280. Adding that 50 puts you at 330, which is the Charizard number, right? Mm-hmm. So to your point exactly, right? Like you can play the Arceus build, have a little bit more consistency, put more energy into play more easily, and still have two Pokemon that with, you know, with Giratina plus Maximum Belt and Iron Leaves, you can one-hit KO two Charizards. And I think, you know, that gave people maybe a lot of confidence in that version of it.
So really cool to see that deck. Lugia was 9% of the meta. Unfortunately, it did not make top 8 like I thought. Got kind of rocked in this tournament.
I mean, I wonder, we'll see like the where it ended up, like the highest placing of it. So I'm not sure what really held it back, but I mean, I got rocked by Lugia and my league challenge, so it's still a good deck. Don't get it twisted. Still a good deck, but
I mean, I know why I got rocked, and we'll talk about that later.
And then I'm looking at day two. Day two, mm-hmm. just really quick, looks very similar to day one, actually. Like, the only difference is there was a slight shuffle with, like, which version of Giratina maybe converted better, and that would be the mm-hmm. Lost Zone version. And weirdly, the Iron Hands, the Turbo Hands deck, the Iron Hands EX deck, climbed up from fifth into fourth place of most converted deck or most played deck in day two. So I think what that just goes to show is that if the deck hits its matchups really well, it's kind of a runaway train. If it runs mm-hmm. well and it hits the right matchups, it has a pretty good conversion rate in the format, but still specific.
I think the best conversion out of them, just eyeballing it, not doing any math, outside of Iron Hands, Iron Crown, is Chin Pao as well. Mm-hmm. Chin Pao went up from 12.7% over to 14.5% in the meta. So also having, you know, just a pretty good conversion rate overall in that in day two, going into the final days of the tournament. So pretty good stuff.
But now, Jake, we can get into top 8, look at some deck lists, look at what people have concocted. Jake, mm-hmm. I think we just got to start with the man, the myth, the legend, Tordraklev, and his Charizard EX deck. Do you want to give us a walk through what is going on with this deck list?
So this Charizard EX deck has moved back into the Pidgeot, right? Pidgeot being a big emphasis in this deck, playing a 4-1-3 line of the Charizard, a 2-2 line of the Pidgeot, and also a Radiant Charizard with a 1-1 Bibarel line, right? You've got other cards like Rotom. Rotom V was a card that was really, really good in the early days, you know, the first days of the Obsidian Flames format that we saw Charizard, and also a Cleffa. The Cleffa, one of, I would say, my favorite pre-release promo of Obsidian Flames. I love this card. If you do not remember Cleffa, the 30 HP psychic Pokemon that has the attack Grasping Draw for free, zero energies and free retreat. The attack says draw cards until you have 7 cards in your hand. So for a deck like Charizard, in my personal opinion, I think Cleffa is a great option at the beginning of the game to, after you use, you know, Buddy Buddy Poffins, after you set up a couple Pokemon, one of the things is having a really good follow-up turn, being able to draw into other things like the rare candies, the Arvins that you're playing, you know, the evolutions, right? So it's kind of, it's much easier to find the combos that you're trying to do because you are trying to play 2 stage 2 lines. So Cleffa, a really, really cool addition in this deck, and a lot of other things that we've seen across this deck with the Ionos, bosses, Arvins, like I mentioned in there. You know, you got the Choice Belt, Defiance Band, which we've seen before, 6 energies, which I feel like is pretty low, but in theory, it's actually not too bad because, like, you know, you find a couple off of the Charizards, right? And that's your energy acceleration. You theoretically don't even have to attach for turn with this deck unless you're like retreating from, or even then, I mean, because the Charizard says basic fire energy, attach them to your Pokemon. It doesn't specify what type of Pokemon. So honestly, you could just go the whole turn without attach. You could go the whole game without physically attaching an energy from your hand to your Pokemon. You play a couple super rods in here because with the 6, sometimes you want to cycle through your Pokemon again, and also to get Charmanders, Charizards back into the deck to string attackers. And with the Radiant Charizard, you're probably using it late game, so it's a pretty cheap attacker overall. So 6 energies is really cool. Didn't expect to see that low of energies. The A spec of choice is Prime Catcher in this deck. Doesn't necessarily surprise me a whole lot. I think Prime Catcher is probably the best option, just being able to chase down different Pokemon, especially on the turns. You know, if you're only hitting 210 damage for the turn, you can Prime Catcher up something that is worth a value instead of hitting into like an opposing Charizard and having to two shot it.
I mean, I will say it's a great A spec. I think it is quite a surprise for Charizard, though. And the reason being, people are talking about this. There's actually a few cards that are pretty insane in this list, Jake, which is, I don't want to, were you saving?
I was going to get to one. Okay.
We'll save it.
The one that's like kind of right above it.
Well, there's a couple more. There's one of the Pokemon lines that he's got a 1-1 line of Bibarel. So he's playing Pidgeot EX and Bibarel in the deck. So Tord just completely like, Bibarel or Pidgeot. Por qué no los dos? Like, you know, he just, I don't know how he, there are 20 Pokemon in this deck, Jake. That is a theme deck. I do not know how this deck is consistent in any way, shape, or form, but it is.
I think it's because a lot of these cards that he's got in there are consistency cards, right? Like the Pidgey, Call for Family Pokemon. You know, you've got the Pidgeot, which quick search is insane. We've talked about it before. You know, you have Rotom V, Lumineon, Cleffa, all of those cards are great support Pokemon to be able to find you things. And so with the Bidoof being a really, really good option off the Buddy Buddy Poffin, really just allows you, and again, like I said with the Cleffa, you know, allows you to draw and find those combos the least amount of times that you have to use quick search, right? I mean, you're using it every turn, but like, the least amount of times that you're like, the least amount of things that you can grab are really good if you constantly draw off of something like Bibarel. So I think it's a really, really good option. I think it makes sense. Maybe not something I would have guessed, right? Heading into this, that Tord would have played Pidgeot and Bibarel, but looking at it on paper, it's like, okay, you know, I think I understand kind of the thought process that was behind this.
Going back to the Prime Catcher, I think this is a surprise because I would argue most Charizard decks, the vast majority, are either playing Maximum Belt or Heroescape. Mm-hmm. So okay. Maximum Belt, just to reiterate, adds 50 damage to your attack.
To your Pokemon's EX.
Attack. Not Pokemon EX. Yeah. It just adds 50 damage to your attack.
I'm pretty sure, like, when I read it earlier.
Does it only say to, because that would be a bad card.
Well, it's, okay, so 50 more damage to your opponent's active Pokemon EX.
Oh, it only works against EXs. That's interesting.
Yes, okay. That's what I was trying to say.
That's interesting. I didn't know that it specified EX kind of like Choice Belt does, but weird. Point being, though, a lot of people are either playing Maximum Belt so that you can take those early game knockouts with Charizard, because it does struggle, right? Because in the early game, you're only doing 180, maybe a little extra with a Choice Belt, or, you know, if you're behind on prizes, a Defiance Band, but generally speaking, you're not doing a lot of damage early, or you're playing the Hero's Cape to make your Charizard 430 HP. But I do think the Prime Catcher, it has another benefit in the deck that I don't think people consider often enough, which is it is the only switching out in this deck.
Oh, yeah, against control.
Yeah, I mean, against control, it's a good switch out, but it's also just like maybe you attack with Radiant Charizard and you want to attack again to keep that single prizer up there. You need to switch in order to do that, and Radiant Charizard, you could just switch into either the Pidgeot or a Cleffa, free retreat, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. So I just wanted to point, that's the only, like, retreating card, but... Mm-hmm. It is interesting. I think that people on stream as well were also like, interesting that he went for that as the ace spec. But Jake, point out the couple of cards that you were holding off on. What were those?
There's two supporters in here that I want to talk about. One is, in my opinion, more obscure than the other. The first one being Professor Turo's Scenario. So we've seen this card pop up here and there, and talking about the switching outs, like you had mentioned, Professor Turo's Scenario is one of those switching outs that you can play, or just a way to get something like Rotom V or Lumineon V off of the field. Cleffa, even if you don't want it to be a liability on your bench. Being able to pick up a Pokemon in play, put it in your hand, and discarding all the cards attached to it. Is also able to, you know, switch out if you're facing against something like control and they've got something stuck in the active. But also, if maybe, you know, there's a chain of Charizards that you can do just because of, you know, how the game is going and they're busy two-shotting, you could actually save a Charizard, right, by picking it up that's been damaged to not give up two prizes, bring another one up to the active and swing, and then later evolve one again on the bench, assuming that you have another rare candy. There is also a Charmeleon in this deck, so you do have some bypass of rare candy, but really, really cool to see two of them in this deck, in my opinion. And then the one that is more obscure, I think most people had to go look up this card and read it, Team Yells Cheer. Yeah. Sean, did you have to look this one up?
I mean, I'm reading it right now, so I didn't have to look it up, but like, it is weird. It is weird.
I was familiar with this card for one of its two kind of abilities, we'll call it, because it was utilized at one point in control decks, being a card from Brilliant Stars. Team Yell's Cheer is a supporter. Shuffle up to three in any combination of supporter cards, except for Team Yell's Cheer, or Pokemon. Mm-hmm. So Pokemon is the one where I was like, wait, he can do Pokemon with it. So it is almost like an extra super rod, in a sense, or a recovery type card for your Pokemon, or maybe supporters in something like Roxanne.
I mean,
Professor Turo's Scenario or boss, you know.
I was going to say, for the control matchup, right? Like, if you have that Team Yells Cheer, so you play two Turos, you don't have any Pal Pads in the deck, but you can Team Yells Cheer in two more Turos and maybe, I don't know, a boss or an Iono or whatever you need. A, stop yourself from decking out, but also just have more switching out. So you effectively have four Turos and a Prime Catcher in this deck. So that's that's like five switches right there. You just win the control matchup, probably.
And you can do some other wacky things as well. Like if you're facing a Lost Box deck, like you can cycle in Jirachi again to be able to hit the field. You can cycle again, you know, if you had to discard a Charizard early, or maybe you need another Charmander, you can throw that in there through Team Yell Shear. So really, really unique and cool card that we saw get some limelight over the course of the weekend.
But Jake, we now need to move on to the second place deck, Isaiah Bradner. People on the stream, I don't know if Isaiah is a finalist curse or something hangs over him, but he has gotten second place at multiple regionals and at least one, if not multiple ICs now. So often in that place of getting to the finals, but not actually being able to push through. But he was playing Lost Box Giratina. Did you watch the match, Jake?
I did not watch the finals match yet, just because of work, but I did see kind of a previous round that they had him streamed. In this, you have the typical Lost Box things of Comfey, Sableye, Cramorant, Radiant Greninja, the Colorless Experiment, Mirage Gate, right? The usual suspects that we see along with the Giratina V and V-Star. What's common in a lot of Lost Box lists, you're playing the Iron Leaves EX in here, right? Because you are playing a good amount of grass energies to be able to, like you and mentioned earlier, for decks, take a quick knockout on something like a Charizard or something weak to a grass Pokemon. But playing a cheeky line in here, Sean, two Shuppets and two different Banettes in here. I heard some rumblings of people talk about this Banette heading into, or these Banettes heading into the event, but I didn't necessarily believe in it per se. But Sean, for anyone who does not know, what are these Pokemon?
Oh boy, I'm gonna do Banette EX first, and then I can try to guess what the purpose of this card is in the deck. It's a 250 HP stage one EX, and its first attack, which I think is the reason it's in the deck, is Everlasting Darkness for one energy, which is important. Does 30 damage, which, whatever. And it says, during your opponent's next turn, they can't play any item cards. So it is item locking them. It's like, you know, old Vikavolt or Seismitoad, right? Like,
yes.
These, like, old school item lock decks. Now, obviously, this is not... Lost Voxina is not an item lock deck. But if you do think about it from the perspective of... you know, I don't know if it's just Charizard. Like, is it Charizard not being able to play rare candy? Is it Chen Pao, maybe?
I think it's
not being able to play rare candy.
Chen Pao not being able to play rare candy, but also the superior energy retrieval.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's just a lot. I mean, items are so influential. You know, we talk about like Buddy Buddy Poffins that we said earlier, stuff like Nest Ball, Counter Catchers, Ultra Balls, Super Rods, right? You know, switches. I think just items in general are really strong in the game. And so having something to item lock, right, is able to allow you to just go a little bit farther in terms of getting stuff in the loss zone, right? Being able to item lock them slows them down if you're having kind of a slow start to be able to, quote unquote, catch back up or gain a lead in the game. So really, really cool to see this Banette in here.
And the other Banette that you mentioned is just the single prize Banette that has the ability Puppet Offering. Once during your turn, you may put a supporter card from your discard pile into your hand, and if you do, put this Pokemon in the loss zone. So seems pretty good. Like, you can, I think what the common thing is that, like, maybe on turn two, if you had a good setup, you can evolve this Banette, and then put it and the card underneath it into the loss zone. So that's two cards you're loss zoning right away. And then maybe the card you got back is a Colorus. So boom, there's another two cards in the lost zone. So it's a nice little combo piece there that ensures that you get a supporter for the turn. And if that supporter is like a Colress, it's four cards in the lost zone guaranteed, basically. So obviously you could use this with other cards like Boss or Roxanne, but really, really interesting line here from Isaiah.
A really, really cool inclusion in the deck. If you're planning on already playing, you know, Everlasting Darkness, Benet EX for either the control matchup or the kind of stally stuff to get you going, this Lost Zone Benet with Puppet Offering really makes sense in this deck, in my opinion, because you can you get a Shove It Down pretty much every game, and then whether or not use Everlasting Darkness or the Puppet Offering is boom, go ahead right there. You probably don't play it every game though, because you probably only play this card if you're like if you're a little bit slower than the usual pace, right, of getting cards in the Lost Zone. I'd have to watch more games of this and maybe play it for myself. I don't know if you like try to quote unquote turbo Lost Zone, right? Like we've seen in the past, but it allows you, if you are a little bit slower, to catch back up and maintain pace to be able to swing with Mirage Gates and Lost Impacts and Lost Minds and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Benet EX, I think it's a good point about like it's a catch up card as well. I think that's a valid, a very interesting point. The other Benet, though, I think the other Benet is just interesting, right? Like, I think when I was watching the match, which I'll just say this now, the match between Tord and Isaiah was pretty rough for Isaiah, especially in game one. Game one was, it felt like it was over turn two or three for Isaiah. He played it out, obviously, but game two was a little closer. Both players had a pretty bad start. So I would say neither deck had like a really amazing set of games, but Isaiah, I think, suffered from some very bad luck in both games. But he was trying to set up the Shuppets because, you know, there is a consistency aspect of Colress of getting to use that turn after turn. So if you're able to set up a couple of comfies, maybe a Giratina V, but you have extra bench space, I do think it's totally fair that you prioritize one bench spot for Shuppet in a lot of games. I'm not surprised by that. You only really need the one bench spot, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, especially because you're only playing the one Puppet Offering, right? You only need one Shuppet in the game. The other just gets lost zoned.
Exactly. So, yeah, but that, you know, pretty straightforward. Other than those Benet inclusions, a pretty straightforward Lost Giratina list. If you enjoyed playing Giratina in the past format and wanted to know what a post-Path to the Peak version might look like, I do think this is really a great starting place if Lost Zone versions are your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But moving into some of the other lists, Jake, what on this list? We've done number one and number two, but what excites you on this list? What do you want to talk about?
I will say it was really nice to see control in two spots of the top eight, one being a third place and then the other one being a last place. We see it's like Pidgeot control, right? Not so much anymore. The Snorlax at this point, Pidgeot just being really, really good. Now occupying two out of the three top spots at EUIC and Torch Charizard, and also this Pidgeot control. So Pidgeot just being a card that has continuously gone up and up in value as people has utilized it. Uses a couple interesting attackers, like we saw the inclusion of Noivern EX, right? Noivern. I've talked about Noivern on the podcast before. I think it was a while ago when it first came out, about how it absolutely beat my bird deck, the birds. I forget what the deck is called with the Murkrow.
United Wings.
United Wings. Yeah. It just destroyed my United Wings deck.
I would imagine.
but including in that, because it does have some value in the meta, got the Luxray V from Astral Radiance, revealing hand and trashing trashing trainer cards. You've got the Chi Yu in there. Chi Yu discarding the top two cards of your opponent's deck with one fire energy, but also for two, doing 100 damage and accelerating fire energy to your Pokemon on the bench. So has some potential of attacking as well, especially because you're playing the Radiant Charizard out of all things. And could be, I don't know, it's just really, really interesting to see like this version of control, because I believe Burt Walters at eighth place. Oh, Burt Walters was kind of playing this, but playing the Snorlax block. But Alessandro Cremascoli playing this like more kind of aggressive attacking version, it feels like, where like you could actually win the game by taking six prizes theoretically.
Yeah, I'm like looking at the list. I think some of the interesting cards, like Noivern, is to your point, you know, that's really the choice if you're playing any of the basic attacker decks. Obviously, you know, we do have decks that have lots of evolutions now. A lot of EXs are evolutions, but all the turbo, you know, turbo hands deck, once you stick a Noivern in the active and they knock out everything around it, so long as that everything around it is not, you know, is not worth six prizes, then yeah, that Noivern just is the last thing. You can't boss or prime catcher around it to get rid of the ability, and then you just win the game from there. Another interesting card I just wanted to point out, this Bouffalant, which is a basic sort of Lost Zone style Pokemon, triple colorless, Lost Headbutt does 50, and you put an energy attached to your opponent's active in the Lost Zone. So, you know, it definitely is a little annoying, I think, to get powered up, because you need a double turbo plus another energy from somewhere, because it's three energy cost. But yeah, you know, putting an energy, if you are able to, you know, trap something in the active that maybe like your opponent just doesn't have any more energy, and that thing, you can get the energy off of it, can be really annoying. I'm just thinking about like that Charizard deck, right? The one from Tord. I think there's a world in which, and I don't know if Tord played against this in one of his rounds, but there's a world in which only six energy becomes a real liability if your opponent is able to Lost Headbutt a couple of those energy into the Lost Zone, and then can either Airy or some of the other control cards away your Super Rods, maybe, such that you just don't have energy anymore to attack. You're just like, oh no, this is terrible. So
interesting. It's also interesting. I saw some people on Twitter talk about Bouffalant's impact and reasoning, and a lot of people were saying also that it's really good in the control mirror, right?
Yeah.
Because like if you look at this list specifically, much to your point of Charizard, right? Six energies being a liability, this deck only playing five energies overall. So being able to potentially put away several different energies, so then your opponent really can't do anything in the game, right? Because they're playing a couple double turbos, right? Because of like the Fang Snipe on the Luxray, the Pidgeot potentially with a Blustery Wind, discarding a stadium, Noivern using Covert Flight. Could be cool, because Covert Flight, if you're facing the mirror, says prevent all damage done to this Pokemon by attacks. But Bouffalant discarding the energy, or putting the energy in the Lost Zone, still goes through. So really cheeky inclusion, just a little one card inclusion that could help you out a long way in some matchups.
Yeah. Cool. A very, very cool, interesting approach to control. I think it's just interesting to see control decks playing so many two prizers. Because it does kind of feel like, you know, there's a world in my brain where I go, man, that's a lot of potential prizes you're putting onto the board. And I think it speaks to, I don't know, I think some of the Snorlax control decks, not to say that Snorlax control didn't require a lot of understanding of a meta and practice, but I do think that sometimes control decks can feel a bit more like solitaire. where your opponent, what your opponent does for the majority of the game doesn't particularly matter to you. And it's really about going through your deck to get into a loop. A lot of control in the past was like that, right? And if you understand what the loop is, and if you can understand how to maneuver that end game loop and trap your opponent like that, that's the only thing that matters. Whereas this feels like we both play a lot of Pokemon. I see this. I see the control pieces, but I don't know how. Like, it would be really difficult for someone like me who doesn't play a lot of control to understand in any given matchup what the right pieces are.
And that's why we play other decks.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, this is like, for me, like one of the more confusing control decks I've seen, and probably the ones that take maybe the most understanding of control and meta. I don't know.
And I think it's just simply because like this deck has the ability to take prizes, right? I think if stuff like the Chiyu, or Radiant like any Charizard. Of these attackers, yeah, like Radiant Charizard wasn't in there, I think it'd be a lot more of a straightforward gameplay and it makes sense. But I think the inclusions like this just add more versatility overall into the deck's game plan and the things that it can do, which make it, you know, a harder matchup and a more influential deck and a stronger archetype in this format. I will say Airy being a card that people were hyping up all week leading up to the tournament. If you do not know, it is a new supporter card through Temporal Forces. Your opponent reveals their hand and you discard up to two item cards you find in there. Not only good for just getting rid of item cards, right? You can catch rare candies, you can catch switches, you know, things like that, but also just getting hand knowledge, right? What is my opponent planning on doing? You know, if you have a prime catcher, let's say, or counter catcher, like in this list, and you want to take a knockout, right? Okay, looking at their hand, what's the best option to be able to knock out? Is their hand completely dead? Do I go for a Bibarel or a Pidgeot or, you know, any of those consistency cards? Or is there no way to chain another attacker? Maybe they only have one Chin Pao on the field and their hand doesn't have any way to search for more Chin Paos. Maybe you just take that knockout and see if they can respond with an attack. So I saw Airy in several lists. I know we haven't really seen it in these that we're showing on the podcast so far from the event, but I saw even Charizards playing Airy, like a one-off copy of Airy. So really interesting to see a card like this make its way into several decks, one that is control-y. It's been a while since we've seen a card like that have that kind of influence. Still early in the format, but
it's interesting. It feels like Charizard playing Airy is similar to Mew VMAX playing Grabber, right? Just kind of like a weird little control piece in a deck that like it just needs to make sure you like whiff for one turn. It's like the card is worth it just to make your opponent whiff once, which is interesting. But two more archetypes in this top eight that we can talk about. One is, we've talked about it a lot, Turbo Hands. I am looking at whose deck list is this? Uffe Axelsen's deck from Denmark. Apologies if anybody knows how to pronounce that better. But yeah, this is, I want to see this too, Jake, because personally, I'm like, I have a version of this deck built. I do not know exactly how to build it to make it more consistent. I think Mew EX in the list, which I see here, is pretty good. But yeah, pretty straightforward. Three Iron Hands, four Iron Crown, two Maridon, and a Mew. And then a bevy of consistency cards is what it seems to be is the thing, right? Arvin, Research, Iono, Erica's Invitation, even, which is interesting. Which, if you don't know, your opponent reveals their hand, you put a basic you find there onto your opponent's bench and switch it, which situationally like is the perfect card if you're trying to take a cheeky two prizes or whatever with Iron Hands.
Yeah, it's a great card to combo with Iron Hands. Amp you very much. But to your point, like, just a lot of consistency cards in here. I would say that, honestly, like, this is pretty close. Like, if you were to have me before the event make out the top Iron Hands EX list, this is probably pretty close to what I would have done. I don't know if I would have done the Mew or the Erica's in here, but pretty much all the other cards just feel really typical, I think, to the game plan and how it would be built.
I'll say this. I've played a decent amount of Turbo Hands myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put Mew into my deck because there are times where you maybe can play out Pokemon and whatever, but you just have an otherwise dead hand. You just mm-hmm. have nothing, and you're like, oh, if only I could draw like a couple of cards, I probably could find an Arvin or a Research or an Iona, right? And you know, the nice thing about Mew, and I think people in general overlook this attack way too much. Its genome hacking attack, while not the best attack in the game, in certain matchups late in the game, say that Iron Hands gets knocked out and you don't have another Iron Hands or whatever, the Heavy Baton lets you put three of those energy wherever. So you can put all three of those energy onto that Mew EX. Say you're in the Charizard mirror. Boom. If it's late in the game, you might be able to knock out the Charizard with Mew. Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I do think that that does get overlooked from time to time, because in a perfect world, you start Maraidon, so your opponent goes into an odd prize count to start with, which is the exact number you need from Mew. So I just wanted to point that out. That's another potential reason to play Mew, but I'll also say with this deck, I'm playing 1 to 2 copies of Lost Vacuum in so many of my decks. I think the card is great. Mm-hmm. And it is the biggest sad in the world, Jake, when you take a big knockout with Iron Hands and your opponent Lost Vacuums your Heavy Baton before knocking out your Iron Hands. And then the game is over. And then you're just like, ugh, gross.
I wonder if there's reason to, like, some reasons of waiting on Heavy Baton until after you play Erica's Invitation, right? Because Erica's Invitation, like we talked about with Airy, reveals hand information.
That's true.
So you're like, oh, if I'm not going to get knocked out here, or I'm not going to get Lost Vacuumed is what I should say. If I'm not going to get Lost Vacuumed here because you don't have a Lost Vacuum or like an Arvin in your hand, maybe I feel good enough about playing this Heavy Baton and putting it on my Pokemon. Now, you probably almost always do it regardless, because it is, like you mentioned, such an influential card in the deck at times. But it could be an interesting interaction that you try to work around with. But only playing 2 Heavy Batons, opting for more future booster energy capsules, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, it would be big sad if your 2 Heavy Batons got prized, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure if for people who play this deck a lot, you just would come up with a slightly different game plan, maybe. You maybe chain a couple of Maraidon attacks in a row instead, try to build up a couple of Iron Hands at the same time, you know, and hope that you find a Heavy Baton off the prizes later. But, you know, I can understand it, because Heavy Baton, I personally think that this deck wants to go so fast that you probably are only ever using one Heavy Baton's ability in the game, right?
Yeah.
You're going to take maybe a knockout, even an early knockout with Maraidon. You take a couple of prizes with Iron Hands, it gets knocked out. You take a couple more prizes with Iron Hands. In a perfect world, you can take 3 prizes with Iron Hands by bossing up an EX, a small EX or a V in the back. And then the bonuses of the Iron Crown plus maybe the future booster puts that 120 at a high enough number to take 3 instead of 2. So I get it. I kind of get the 2 Heavy Batons, but it mm-hmm. can be worrying at times for sure.
It's a really interesting deck, especially if you're looking for something fresh, something new, right? Because it is a completely new archetype through Temporal Forces. So if you're looking for something like that, that's a good one. But another cool new archetype that's in here, I know some people were excited about this, Roaring Moon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean, but maybe not necessarily the Roaring Moon type that I would have personally guessed. Honestly, this Roaring Moon deck playing both of the ancient Pokemon Roaring Moon, both the little baby Roaring Moon in Temporal Forces that has the Vengeance Fletching doing 70 plus 10 more for each ancient card in your discard pile, but also the Roaring Moon EX with the Frenzing Gouging being able to knock out literally anything on the field. So really, really cool to see that card included with this deck. I think this is one of the more surprises in the top eight, in my opinion, just based on how this archetype is, because Sean, that's all the ancient Pokemon in this deck.
Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of, it's not like the ancient box that a lot of people maybe are playing on TCG Live, which is all single prizers. You're playing a mix of dark and fighting energy for the Koridon, which I will say that deck is also very good, right? It's a great single prizer deck. I think, you know, it's obviously, it's not Reggie in terms of like the play style at all, but there's some part of me that says like, if you were the kind of player who enjoyed Reggie's and never really vibed with Lost Box, maybe try Ancient Box. I don't know why, Jake, but I feel like...
I would say it's more like United Wings.
It might be more like United, but it's way more consistent than United Wings, I think.
I think it's a
much better single prize deck.
I think it's got some consistency. And this version that we're talking about that got top eight plays one of my favorite new cards from the set. Dunsparce. Dunsparce, that stage one Pokemon with Runaway Draw. Once during your turn, you may draw three cards. If you drew cards in this way, shuffle this Pokemon and all attached cards into your deck. So a nice draw three and then shuffle back in to get that viability off the bench. And remember, you can use it at any point, right? It doesn't say like when you evolve, draw three cards and then use the ability. This is just whenever you want to do it, go ahead and do it. So really, really cool to see a 3-3 line of Dunsparce in this deck, because I think we talked about in our set review that I like the deck and it's cheeky, but I wasn't sure how much of an influence it would actually have on the meta. So to see it in the top eight right away in the first event is just makes my heart warm.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've actually seen a decent amount of Dunsparce and like played around in a lot of different decks, because it's hard to compete with a straight draw three, right? We remember, I do think that the Zoroark GX was probably better because it's also an attacker. And Curlia may technically be better in some ways because it evolves into something useful. But outside of that, like just a straight draw three that you can, you know, with if you get the right kind of deck going, you can kind of just recycle them over and over again. And it's actually a sneaky way to maybe not completely beat control, but it's a sneaky way to like keep control at bay a little bit to buy yourself some turns. Or at least I should say probably mill more than control, but yeah. It's cool.
Well, you're only doing plus one from your deck. Like, cause you draw three, but then you put back two, right? Cause you put away Dunsparce and Dunsparce. So it's not necessarily milling as fast as control or the Great Tusk mill, which was non-existent in this tournament.
Well, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I don't know. It's mostly just that you're putting cards back in your deck, right? So you can strategically time this. So like, say you have no cards in your deck for whatever reason. You can Dunsparce. Can you Dunsparce for zero? Oh, no. Once during your turn, you may draw three cards.
Yeah, and it says if you drew cards in this way. So you have to draw at least one card.
Yeah. But still, you know, there's a world in which this matters. But anyways, just drawing three off the top of your deck, it's just good. It's just good. So, and it's also a great pivot Pokemon that I've seen. So if something gets knocked out, you promote a Dunsparce, you evolve it, you play a bit of your turn out, and then you shuffle
draw
back
three and shuffle away.
Exactly. So
Playing a couple supporters in here, the Saitama's Vitality to get the energy on the Roaring Moons, whether it's the Baby or the EX, and then Explorer's Guidance, playing a four of each in here. Because remember, the more ancient cards you have in your discard pile, the more damage that the Baby Roaring Moon does. So playing stuff like Earthen Vessel in this list, the Ancient Booster Energy Capsule.
Yep.
Right. There's a couple different options to be able to boost up a little bit of that damage, not necessarily forcing more than there needs to be in this. You probably just use Vengeance Fletching to either take like a take a weakness knockout, or maybe to finish off a Pokemon that maybe you use Calamity Storm on in a previous turn to be able to just clean things up overall. Yeah.
I did the math, and your maximum damage output with the single prize Roaring Moon is 290, I think. 280 or 290. Okay. So it's decent, but like, look, it's not designed to be the same as the other Ancient Box deck. I think if you need really big knockouts, that's what Roaring Moon EX is for. But
yes, the Frenzy Gouging.
But if you need a really consistent single prize attacker that can like maybe take out other single prize decks, to your point about hitting for weakness and making your opponent, you know, really worried about, you know, I only have a single prizer in front of me. I think that is more like you're just trying to win the prize race. And then the big knockouts come from the EX.
So really, really cool deck to see. One of my favorites, actually, to see from this event. I mean, obviously, besides Dialga, right? I love Dialga, but... really, really cool to see a card like the Dunsparce really excel in this tournament. But Sean, even though my predictions on Iron Hands and whatchamacallit, Lugia were not super close, I will say Gardevoir did get ninth.
Oh, so close. In
Fabian Pujol. Yes, I would. I mean, I did say, like, I don't know really, but a person can go really, really far with the deck. So Fabian, I think, bubbled out as well, bubbled out of top eight, so still doing really, really well. And you know, I don't think I was too far off in my list. I also know Piper Lapine played it for, I think it was top 16,
got 18th,
so top 20,
really good.
So still really, really good. So like I said, you know, the great players, you know, the players that have played a lot of Gardevoir can play Gardevoir and make a really good run with it, because even though top 20 is not, you know, top eight, whatever, it is still a respectable number with 2,600 players in a tournament, you know, like
for sure. So don't be disheartened. Definitely. Definitely look around at other standings outside of the top eight, because honestly, top eight is an amazing accomplishment, but anywhere in the top 100, even at a tournament this big, can come down to resistance, right? Can come down to one bad game, one bad matchup. And so there are definitely going to be some hidden gems in a tournament this big outside of top eight. So
check out. And there's a lot of deck lists. There's a lot of deck lists that have been posted on Pokestats.com that are outside of the top eight, or whatever Pokestats' website is. Because I don't think it's actually Pokestats.com.
PTCG Stats.
Yes, PTCG Stats. Thank you. I typed in Pokestats.com and I was like, oh, this is not the website that I wanted. But anyways, PTCGStats.com. That's going to be the place where you can find that. But anyway, Sean, any other thoughts that you had?
No, that's it. It was an exciting weekend. I'm excited to just keep playing this format, you know, seeing what else is out there.
I think it's going to be really cool. We'll see how stale it gets. How quickly, but for now we'll just keep enjoying and keep playing. Thank you so much for listening to the Metapod Podcast. The Pokemon Podcast revolves around the evolving meta. I'm Jake, that's Sean, and we'll talk to you later.